Was Herod's temple actually on the Temple Mount? It seems like an obvious question with an obvious answer, but I've received so many comments, emails, and questions brought up by, well, a new trend that seems to be hoping that the Jewish temple of antiquity was never on the Temple Mount, but located elsewhere for some very interesting reasons. So here are my thoughts on that. When a new archaeological find is unearthed, it reveals but rarely reinvents history. Neither is the case with recent assertions that the Temple Mount in Jerusalem was actually a Roman garrison and that the Jewish temple was situated elsewhere, perhaps on a massive man-made platform in the city of David. This idea has also become a flashpoint of controversy and Christian division, often resulting in zealous opposition to those who hold to the original historical view of Herod's temple location for highly questionable eschatological reasons. Bob Cornuk, the president of the Bible Archaeology Search and Exploration Institute, is the champion behind Ernest Martin's idea that the temple was not located on Jerusalem's historical Temple Mount, but rather on a now-destroyed platform south of the existing Temple Mount at the upper end of the city of David. Mr. Cornuk is an intelligent man, a world traveler, adventurer, theologian, and author of several sensational books in which he purports to have found the real Mount Sinai, a theory that may have merit, and the location of Noah's Ark and so forth. His assertion that Herod's temple was located south of the existing Temple Mount, however, conflicts with overwhelming archaeological, historical eyewitness and extant evidence. His and others' videos and writings, though recorded on location in Jerusalem, confirm that his understanding of history and archaeology is unfortunately greatly lacking. For instance, Jesus predicted that the temple would be destroyed to the last stone, which occurred exactly as he predicted in 70 AD. A section of the ancient wall, however, the Western or Wailing Wall, has been claimed by some adherents of this theory to be a still-standing portion of the temple itself, leading them to conclude that the actual temple must have stood elsewhere. This in turn would suggest that the existing platform above the wall was instead the location of the Antonia Fortress, a Roman barracks confirmed by the New Testament scriptures and numerous historical writings, to be attached to the northwest ridge of the Temple Mount. The still-standing western wall, however, has been confirmed by history, archaeology, eyewitness documentation, engineering, and more, to be an exposed section of the massive retaining wall surrounding the 36-acre platform on which Herod's temple once stood. Though the temple was utterly obliterated as Jesus predicted, the massive platform, though badly damaged, has remained, later to become the site of a Jupiter temple, a garbage dump, and a Muslim shrine. Archaeologists, along with ancient and modern historians, journalists, and scholars, whether hyper-religious or secularist critics, overwhelmingly agree that the destroyed temple originally stood atop the existing platform. Moreover, the Jewish people have historically held the existing Temple Mount as sacred from the 1st century BC until Roman Emperor Hadrian banished them from Jerusalem and, as history recorded, built a temple to Jupiter on the site of the Jewish temple to deliberately defile it. In other words, Hadrian, the Romans, and the Jews knew the temple location and acted according to their knowledge. Further accounts and descriptions by Josephus, the Gospel writers, and other ancient historians who were either eyewitnesses, interviewed eyewitnesses, or had access to now vanished written accounts attest to the location of Herod's temple as the centerpiece of the existing platform, with the Antonia Fortress attached to the platform's northwest corner. Even more, there's no archaeological evidence that the temple ever existed anywhere else. There have been some valid speculations that the actual location may have been 100 meters north or south of the Dome of the Rock, but they still place the temple on the platform. The extensive excavations south of the southern Temple Mount retaining wall have yielded no proof whatsoever of a Jewish temple being situated there. This is evidenced by the fact that no credentialed archaeologist or historian ever set forth such a hypothesis, much less acted on it. Another argument for the temple location being at the city of David was its need for huge volumes of water for daily operations. In other words, ceremonial cleansing, washing away sacrificial animal blood, etc. This idea revolves around the location of the Gihon Spring, a still-functioning freshwater source flowing from the eastern flank of the Ophel Ridge upon which the city of David actually sits even to this day. Advocates of the city of David location teach that there were no known flowing water sources north and uphill of the Temple Mount, placing the temple further downhill and much nearer the Gihon Spring. In fact, during the first and second temple periods, there were several active springs north of the extant temple platform and Antonia site that have since dried up. Further, during the second temple period, two aqueducts channeled water from Solomon's pools near Bethlehem to feed reservoirs and cisterns located in Jerusalem's upper and lower cities. The upper city reservoirs and cisterns supplied the western portion of Jerusalem, including the vast complex of cisterns and subterranean channels beneath the temple platform. Additionally, situated to the immediate north of the platform are the Bethesda pools and the Great Pool of Israel, which also supplied year-round water to the temple. Those who press the argument for a city of David temple on the basis of a water shortage have stumbled into a logical fallacy. If the existing platform was actually the Antonia Fortress because there was not enough water available for daily temple operations, then how much water would be required to supply an entire resident Roman legion? 6,000 men, 2,000 support troops, cavalry including hundreds of horses with stables, and an unspecified number of servants. This makes the water source assertion a moot point. The water source assertion leads yet to another problem with the claim that the Temple Mount was in fact the Antonia Fortress. The contention that the Antonia housed a full Roman legion presumes that the footprint of the fort's historic location was far too small to accommodate such a huge population of soldiers. Therefore, the Temple Mount must have been the Antonia. Josephus described the Antonia as a rectangle, measuring 490 feet long east to west, by 260 feet wide north to south, with walls 60 to 75 feet high. Three of the four corners of the structure were crowned with 75-foot-high towers, with the northeast tower reaching a full 115 feet. Josephus bragged that the fort could house a Roman legion, yet his writings describe a castle for a cohort, 600 legionaries plus support troops, not a camp for a legion. Josephus also described the temple as the dominating structure of Jerusalem, with the Roman fort policing the temple area from the northwest corner. In the book of Acts, chapter 21, verses 33 through 35, Luke described the Antonia Fortress as a Roman barracks and not as a legionary camp, which could only have housed a cohort, a powerful force in and of itself that could quickly be reinforced by Roman garrisons known to have been situated to the west and northwest, both inside and outside the city of Jerusalem. These recent assumptions run cross-current to ancient descriptions in archaeology about the size and occupancy of the Antonia, mainly due to Josephus's bloated personnel statistics as he wrote under the scrutiny of his Roman superiors. His recorded measurements of the Antonia, however, tell a completely different story. Another proposal for the Temple Mount, being a Roman legionary fort, is suggested by its shape, size, and massive fortifications. This proposition, however, overlooks the mindset and background of its builder, Herod the Great. Herod was a paranoid man of diminutive stature who zealously pursued a big legacy, resulting in the construction of gigantic structures and monumental cities. Fortresses like Masada, Machaerus, Kypros, and Herodium, to name a few, were designed as impenetrable shelters should he fall into disfavor with Rome or with the general population. His palace in Jerusalem was also an impressive citadel, but for Herod, the last true refuge in Jerusalem was to be his remodel of the Temple Mount, which he built with all the features of an enormous stronghold in the style of Rome. Herod was ethnically an Idumean, religiously a Jew, but politically a Roman. He was a citizen and a regional puppet king of the empire who admired the might and resolve of Rome and sought to impress Caesar by outdoing Rome's many enormous constructions. The suggestion that the Temple Mount had the shape of a Roman legionary encampment derives from Herod's devotion to Rome and his desire to remain in good standing with Caesar. But was the platform ever used as a permanent legionary fortress? Every eyewitness account of any era and scientific analysis of the enormous complex testifies to the contrary. The shape and architecture were indeed Roman because Herod was Roman and dedicated to Caesar. But the huge platform fortress was specifically engineered to protect Herod's remodeled temple, which itself was designed and built as an impenetrable stronghold within a fortress. It was so secure, in fact, that it became the last refuge of the Jews to fall during the Great Revolt in 70 AD. To address certain problems raised by the Temple Mount Antonia fortress theory, its proponents have suggested that Herod built another temple platform to the south of the existing platform. This alternate platform, said to have towered almost 450 feet, their estimate, above the Kidron Valley, would have required a volume of stone rivaling that of the Great Pyramid of Egypt. Further, any engineering for such a structure would have been incapable of supporting the incredible mass of the stone ashlars, especially the towering southeast corner of the proposed platform. Even Roman arches like those comprising Solomon's stables, the interior supporting structure of the Southern Temple Mount platform, could not have supported the enormous height and weight, let alone the massive 16-story temple structure atop the alleged platform. Even more, the workforce necessary to build such a wonder would have been all but impossible to employ. Jews did not use slaves, nor did the ancient quarries in and around Jerusalem reflect a fraction of the huge number of ashlars necessary for such a gigantic project. Perhaps the greatest fallacy of the alternate temple platform proposition is the absence of a huge volume of ruined ashlars in archaeological excavations or in secondary construction in and around Jerusalem. Imagine if the Great Pyramid in Cairo was taken apart and its stones left lying around. If the theory held any merit, there would have been mountains of ruined blocks waiting to be repurposed in future centuries of construction, which do not exist outside the known historical destructions and reconstructions of the city. Ironically, the people who most happily agree with this theory are the Waqf, the Muslim ruling council of the existing temple platform, the Mufti, the supreme head of the Waqf, and the fundamentalist Islamic groups bent on the elimination of Israel. This flawed theory bolsters anti-Semitic and militant anti-Israeli groups who claim historical Muslim sovereignty over the site. People who also assert that the location of the Jewish temple on the existing platform was a myth invented by quote-unquote lying Jews, despite the enormous evidence to the contrary. Other major challenges to the alternate platform proposition include the ongoing excavations and locations of Parthian Queen Helena's first century mansion, the probable foundations of the Hasmonean Acra, and the ruins of Solomon's palace discovered on the northern edge of the city of David, south of the existing temple platform. Another, the confirmed route of a recently excavated first century pilgrim road, tracing the draw of the Teropian Valley south from the monumental staircase that once ascended to the top of the southwest corner of the Temple Mount, to the Siloam Pool at the southern tip of the city of David. Additionally, the road passes through a significant part of the same acreage as the proposed City of David Temple platform site. Another, the large number of Herodian-style period mikvaot adjacent to the south, east, and western walls of the existing Temple Mount platform. Mikvaot? Attached to a Roman structure? Really? The discovery of a trumpeting stone among the Great Revolt debris at the southwest corner of the platform retaining walls. And another, the discovery of the remains of an ancient temple cut into the bedrock of the city of David, attesting not to the great Jewish temples, but to a small pagan one, one perhaps built prior to David's conquest of Jerusalem. The Jews would never have built their temple on a pagan sacrificial site. So, why? Why has this hypothesis generated so much excitement and visceral zeal in the Christian community, especially among premillennialists? Simply put, people who believe we are in the end times, as I do, love predictability concerning the prophecies of Christ's return, as evidenced by those who unwisely set rapture dates, predict his imminent return with blood moons and Christian-based astrologies, and so forth. Not the least of which is the rebuilding of the Jewish temple on its original location in Jerusalem, Daniel 9, Matthew 24, etc. Premillennial Christians, again, I am one, continue to seek rational solutions to the predictions of biblical prophecy, including the problem of the location of the prophesied third temple. Since the Temple Mount today lies under Muslim rule, it seems that there is little hope for a new Jewish temple to ever be rebuilt on the existing platform as long as Islam prevails at the site. Thus, Cornuke and Martin's theory offers a convenient solution. If the temple was originally located south of the existing platform in territory currently under the control of Jewish authorities, it could easily be rebuilt there. Thus, the Jewish temple sacrifices could be resumed at any time, unimpeded by Islamic opposition, Daniel 9:27, and accelerating the prophetic timetable of Christ's second coming. Sensational, to say the least. But here's the rub. The Antichrist, according to the prophet Daniel, will be instrumental in allowing the Jews to resume their sacrifices, implying that they will have some sort of temple where they can perform them. Further, the Jews have historically insisted that their next temple, or at least the altar, must be situated on the exact location of the previous temples, placing it in the center of the existing platform, squarely atop Islam's third holiest site. Only a miracle could bring about such an improbable arrangement at such a volatile location, which is exactly what the Bible prophetically proposes. According to Daniel 9:27, the Antichrist will broker an impossible deal with the Jewish, Gentile, and presumably Islamic world for the Jews to resume their sacrifices where the temple once stood. A miracle. Anyone who could pull off such a diplomatic coup would be dubbed a Messiah by the Jews and worshipped as a god by the world, which, according to Bible prophecy, is exactly what both will believe of the Antichrist. The idea of placing the temple in a more convenient location is prophetically unnecessary, and worse, downplays the utterly improbable miracle that will thrust the Antichrist onto the world stage. Since Scripture prophesies that this must happen, rebuilding the temple on the existing platform is God's stated plan and the prophetic catapult that will propel the Antichrist to the pinnacle of the world's power game. On a personal note, my opinions here have little value compared to the mountain of empirical evidence and scholarship concerning the historical location of the temple. It would behoove you to explore it on your own. Even so, my own on-site observations, examinations, and decades-long study of the evidence attesting to the temple location on the existing platform are entirely at odds with Martin's and Cornuke's assertions. Further, the once reputable K House, who produced a well-made video on the subject, unfortunately now gives me pause. Is it possible that a third temple could be built in the vicinity of the city of David? Why not? But as people who openly lay claim to the truth, we must never, ever sacrifice our integrity. Dismissing the enormous volumes of archaeological, scientific, and historical evidence to solve an eschatological difficulty would be to do just that. I would be happy to personally show you around Jerusalem, where I've lived, taught, and led more than 30 study groups, where together we can visit excavations and museums, where you can see what was and what wasn't there. I go every year.